This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Shifley in the slot, drops it back, score! Josh Morris, he has his first NHL goal.
Wheeler plays the carom off the quarter board perfectly. Morris, he scores! Patan to Fabry to Morris.
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. For all those joining us live this morning on TSN1290.ca and via the iHeartRadio app, we say good morning, universe, and welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. After a month's hiatus, we are thrilled to be with you on this Saturday, the 1st of September. 2 hours of hockey talk for you on this Saturday morning. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined in studio by my very good friend, Ezra Ginsberg. Dave Minuk is away from the show this Saturday. He's, I presume, lost in a provincial park somewhere. I'm not really sure where Dave is, but hopefully he'll be back for next Saturday's 3 hour show. Ezra Ginsberg, Saturday morning, September 1st. Good to see you, my old friend. How has your month off been?
It's been amazing.
Yeah.
We're back. Yeah, it's been an amazing summer, but I gotta say, it's very strange because we've never taken the full month of August off. So,
true.
Of course, it's nice to, you know, have that month off. And, you know, I've got a newborn daughter, so it's, you know, a great
another
opportunity.
One?
No, I still have the same one.
Okay, yeah. The same one. I just wanted to make sure. I didn't know how.
Well, my daughter's 3 months old, so it's physically impossible for Naomi to get pregnant and deliver another child in that time span.
It's true. I know how studly you are. It could have been with another woman or something, but I'm glad to hear that it wasn't, that this is your only newborn daughter still.
I missed it, though, Drew. I mean, the first couple of weeks, okay, you know, you spend some time at the cottage. It's great. Naomi's got a cottage. We're out there all the time.
Yeah.
It's awesome. It's been a great summer. It's been a hot summer, but, I mean, this is what we do.
This is what
Saturdays,
we do.
Saturdays, we talk about hockey, and, yeah, you know, it's September. First, now training camp is less than 2 weeks away. It's unbelievable. I'm pumped personally to be back. I mean, I would rather be doing this than anything else in the world.
Well, there you go. Anyways, we are back. It is Saturday morning. You mentioned training camp about 2 weeks away, give or take. Josh Morrissey, let's start the show. You heard the clips off the top. Sean Assor, producer, played them for you. Josh Morrissey, still unsigned. Still a restricted free agent alongside Eric Comrie. We can touch on Comrie as well. Any concern as the calendar flips from August to September now regarding the status of Josh Morrissey? You've heard pundits talk about it. They've all said basically the same thing. Nothing to worry about here. Probably just trying to come to an agreement on a longer-term deal. There's probably a bridge contract that's already been agreed to. Do you agree with these pundits? I mean, or do you think that as we sit here, as the calendar has rolled over to the new month, that there is maybe beginning to be some concern regarding the status of Josh Morrissey, his RFA status? I mean, we know that he's not going to play for another team in the NHL. It's either going to be the Jets or bust, obviously. But do you have any concern with training camp less than 2 weeks away, or give or take a day or two, that Josh Morrissey might not be in camp with the Jets when it begins?
Drew, I have zero concern.
Zero concern.
And we talked about it back in July.
We did.
I mean, and you just mentioned it. I mean, we know it's going to be a bridge deal, or it's going to be a long-term deal, right? It's going to be a 6, 7, 8 year deal. And we just saw Noah Hanifin sign with the Calgary Flames for 6 years, and I think his AAV was just under $5 million. I actually think Brady Shea is a better comparable for Josh Morrissey. I think if you look at Brady Shea's numbers and you look at Josh Morrissey's just offensive numbers, Shea and Morrissey were only separated by 1 point. And
Brady Shea, a defenseman, of course, for the New York Rangers.
Right, and he got 5.25. So I think if you're Josh Morrissey, you're probably going to be somewhere in between, you know, $5.25, $5.5 million, maybe, you know, closer to $6 million on a long-term deal. If you're talking about a bridge deal, you're probably looking at, what, $4 million a year? Something like 2 years, $8 million. But, you know, a few things on Josh Morrissey, Drew. If you remember back in 2011, the first year the Jets 2.0 were back, Zach Bogosian signed in mid-September. Remember, he signed that bridge deal, and then later on, he signed that long-term deal in 2013. I believe it was 7 years, I'm not mistaken.
That sounds right back. I mean, that would be the contract he's still playing under in Buffalo, so I can just look that up real quick
right now.
Right,
so he signed a bridge year deal.
Yeah. $5.142 million is what it was. So it was a 7-year, $36 million contract that he signed on the 29th of July.
It's pretty amazing because Josh Morrissey's not going to be that far away. I think he's going to make more than 5.1 AAV.
If he signs long-term.
Right. Long-term, I'd say it's probably going to be around maybe 5.5, but the point is, Bogo signed that contract back in 2011 on a bridge term deal, and that was in mid-September, right around when training camp was starting.
September 14th, 2011,
yeah.
He signed a two-year, $5 million contract, an AAV of $2.5 million.
Right, so this is not unprecedented for Chevy and Jets 2.0. I strongly believe Josh Morrissey is going to sign in the next week to 10 days, so I'm not worried about it at all. And the Jets do have the salary cap room. So it's not a question of the salary cap room. It's a question of, you know, does Josh Morrissey want to sign that bridge deal? And then, you know, he puts up some good offensive numbers. And then his next contract, he can now make more money AAV. I don't necessarily know that, you know, Josh Morrissey is going to put up 50 or 60 points and all of a sudden he's going to become a $7 million defenseman 2 years from now. I would absolutely lock him up for whether it's $5.25 million a year, $5.5 million a year, whatever it is. I mean, Josh Morrissey, as you know, Drew, I mean, he really stepped up his game this year, became a top pairing defenseman for the Jets alongside Jacob Trouba, and the Jets know that he is going to be a cornerstone piece for them going forward. So I realize there are a lot of Jets fans right now that are, you know, a little bit nervous that he hasn't signed yet. And I thought Morrissey was going to sign sometime in August. I really did. And now that he hasn't signed, it's September 1st now, I'm not worried about it at all because I really do believe he will sign.
Do you think
before training camp starts?
I agree with you that I think that he will sign before training camp starts. I was on TSN 1260 in Edmonton this week, our sister station in Edmonton, and the same topic came up, and I suggested that I believe that Morrissey will be in Jets training camp when it opens. Do you think he'll be there? If you were a betting man, would you say that it's more likely that he's there under a bridge deal or that it's more likely he's there under a long-term contract? I'm defining long-term as anything more than, let's say, 3 years.
Yeah, it's a really good question because if you're Kevin Cheveldayoff, mm-hmm. I think you probably would like to lock him up long term, but you're worried about next year's salary cap.
Sure. Right now the Jets have about, you know, $10 million in salary cap space for this season, which is going to be enough for this year. It'll even allow them maybe potentially to add something at the trade deadline if that was something they'd be interested in doing, because Morrissey's the only big RFA. You know, Comrie's not going to get a big dollar figure, but it's next year and the year after when Wheeler's a free agent and Laine's a free agent that the contracts begin to get a little tight and the salary cap begins to get a little tight.
Right, and a player like Tyler Myers, his contract comes off the books, so you do sure. have some players whose, you know, money will be off the books, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
It's really tough to say, Drew, because if you're Josh Morrissey, right, you could get that prove me bridge contract, but you're leaving money on the table. If you sign a long-term contract, you're probably going to make an extra, what, million and a half a year. So I can see why Josh Morrissey and his agent want the long-term deal. I can see why Kevin Cheveldayoff and Larry Simmons and the Jets management want the long-term deal. But maybe, you know, if they're able to save a little bit of money next year, mm-hmm. that could help them in signing Blake Wheeler when he's a UFA or signing Patrick Laine when he's an RFA. If I was a betting man, I would say that Josh Morrissey is going to sign a long-term deal.
Okay, so you still think that there's a possibility that the long-term deal gets done?
Yes.
I tend to fall on the other side of the ledger right now. I think that if the long-term deal, I think they're trying to get a long-term deal done, and that's why a contract hasn't been announced. I think it was Craig Button who spoke with Mike McIntyre of the Free Press earlier this week, and Mike's going to join us next segment saying, you know, Button thinks that there's probably a bridge deal done in a contract, in a drawer somewhere, just waiting to be signed if they can't come to terms on the long-term deal.
Right, and we talked about it. I mean, that's easy. I mean, you could go on salary, you can go on Cap Friendly.
Yeah.
I was going to say Cap Geek. Cap Geek doesn't exist anymore, unfortunately. That was a great site too, but Cap Friendly is a great site. You could go on there and pull up comparables.
Sure.
I mean, you're looking at somewhere in the range of 2 years, $4 million a year. And if he's signing a long-term deal, whether that's, you know, 7 or 8 years, he's going to be somewhere between $5 and $6 million.
If you're Morrissey, I mean, you're looking at it, you're 23 years of age. You're 4 years away from unrestricted free agency. If I'm Morrissey, and I mean, this is just my personal opinion. I don't know Josh Morrissey. He's going to do what's best for Josh Morrissey. I'm looking at a 5-year deal. You get some, you know, financial guarantee for the rest of your life, of course. 5 years, you know, $5.5 million, whatever it might be. You got $27.5 million in the bank. You're good for the rest of your life, obviously. And boom, if your career takes off as you expect it to, you're an unrestricted free agent when you're 28 years old. And we've seen it all summer long. If you're in the prime of your career, and sure, 28 is still pretty close to your prime. Maybe you're beginning to age out a little, but you're still getting signed to big dollars. If you're 27, 28 years old and you're an unrestricted free agent and you're a quality player, even if an above average player, you're getting paid huge amounts of dollars. We've seen it with, I mean, obviously Josh Morrissey's not going to be Drew Doughty, but you see what Doughty signed for. You see what Tavares signed for. We're going to talk about Tyler Seguin and his situation in Dallas a little bit later on in the show. If you're hitting an unrestricted free agency at the right time, you know, $8 million, $9 million, that's certainly not off the table for a lot of these players who are in that upper echelon or above average in the NHL these days.
I see your point, Drew, but I just don't see the Jets ever signing Morrissey to a five-year deal. It's only going to be beneficial to Josh Morrissey. Because
why isn't that beneficial to the Jets, though?
Well, if he's a pending UFA, I think it comes down to why wouldn't you sign him? If you know that Josh Morrissey, and to this point, I mean, Josh Morrissey has been, alongside Mark Scheifele, has been the model of development for the Jets, right?
Sure.
He's a first-round draft pick. Mm-hmm. He comes up through junior, plays for the Manitoba Moose. Mm-hmm. He's now played 2 years for the Jets, and now he's developed into what they thought he was going to develop into when they drafted him back in 2013, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think if you're the Jets, why wouldn't you lock him up to 7 or 8 years? If you're Josh Morrissey, sure, I understand why you would sign a five-year deal. Well, I just don't see that happening.
If you split the difference. I mean, if I'm Morrissey, I don't want to necessarily give away 8 years of my, because then you're hitting free agency again when you're in your early 30s.
But he likes playing in Winnipeg.
Yeah, I know.
I don't think he's giving anything up.
Well, 5 years, I think you have another opportunity to hit an even bigger jackpot. 8 years, yeah, that opportunity still exists, you know, to some extent, but I think teams, as we've seen, are a little more hesitant to pay a guy who's 30, 31 and hitting free agency than a guy who's 27, 28 hitting free agency.
You said it earlier, though, Drew. I mean, you're getting that financial certainty. You're set for life.
Yeah,
but you get that $5.5 million a year. I don't think Morrissey's ever going to be an $8 million a year defenseman.
But you get that financial security set for life at 5 years and $5.5 million. I mean, unless you're an absolute buffoon with your money, and I,
there's a big difference between 5 years and 8 years.
And if I'm the player, I take the 5 years, and the Jets, I think, are comfortable because they have some cost certainty for longer than a bridge deal. Obviously, the Jets would probably want to lock him up to as long as possible, given his career path and given his development. But if I'm Morrissey, I'm much happier at 5 years, bird in the hand, and an opportunity to hit the jackpot again than 8 years, bird in the hand, and probably maybe slightly less of an opportunity to strike it as rich if I'm in my early 30s.
Oh, absolutely. You make some good points. I'm just saying I don't know necessarily that that happens, and I don't think that the Jets prefer that.
Quickly, Eric?
Because he becomes a UFA at the end of that contract.
Oh, absolutely. But I mean, that's, you know, he's always, at some point in time, he's always going to become a UFA. If I'm Morrissey, I want to hit that UFA status.
Sure, but
status.
Why not sign him to 8 years if you can now?
If you can. I don't think you can. So I'm saying if you're the Jets, I don't think you can sign him to eight, because I don't think Morrissey would take eight.
Why?
Because I think you'd rather take five and be able to hit the jackpot again. That's what I'm thinking, is that you'd rather take five and be able to hit the jackpot when you're 27, 28, rather than taking eight and trying to, again, hit maybe a little bit more difficult of a jackpot when you're in your early 30s. We'll see. We'll know in the next couple weeks how the situation certainly plays out. Quickly, a word on Eric Comrie. He's the other RFA. Played the majority of the season last year with the Manitoba Moose. There's questions as to what his role is going to be with the team. Where can he win the backup job behind Connor Hellebuyck? Or is he destined for the Moose again?
You know, I don't think there should be much of a debate about what his role is going to be. He's going to play for the Moose.
You don't think that there's a possibility? I mean, the only other goalie really is, you know, the free agent signing, Laurent Brossard.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's always the chance that Eric Comrie plays some games in the NHL, but he's going to spend the majority of the season in the American Hockey League.
So you think it's, you know, and that contract you expect will come to fruition in the next couple weeks as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm surprised it hasn't happened already.
Much like Morrissey, we'll keep you abreast of all of the situations. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. When we come back, Mike McIntyre of the Winnipeg Free Press is going to join us for some more Jets talk. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Saturday morning, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live here on TSN 1290. This segment brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection, as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. To make an appointment to get your teeth to ting, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Pleased to welcome back to the program our very good friend from the Winnipeg Free Press. He covers the Winnipeg Jets, as you well know. Mike McIntyre joins the program. Mike, good morning. Thanks for doing this.
Hey, absolutely. Happy September, guys.
Likewise. You know, a little chill in the air when I was out walking the dog first thing this morning, so I guess that means it's almost time for hockey season, Mike.
You're just an old man, Drew.
Well, you're also a better dog parent than I, because I have not walked either of our two hounds yet this morning. So, good on you.
Thank you, Mike. I appreciate the praise. Obviously, Mike brought you on to talk a little bit about the Jets as we sit here on, as you said, the 1st of September, about a week away from the Prospects Tournament, tournament in Vancouver, going to be a couple games against the Canucks Prospects now, and then a couple weeks away from training camp as a whole. A lot of chatter, a lot of talk in the broadsheet of the paper earlier this week about Josh Morrissey. As we sit here on the 1st, Mike, are you surprised that a deal with Josh Morrissey hasn't been consummated?
I really am. I thought Josh Morrissey would get done a lot earlier than this. And I guess now, reflecting on what's happened or hasn't happened over the last couple months, maybe we shouldn't be all that surprised that it's taking significant amount of time, because this is a very, very, very important deal, you know, for the long-term future of the Winnipeg Jets. And Kevin Cheveldayoff does not have a track record of just rushing into things, does he? So, you know, I guess in hindsight, the fact that a lot of time and care is being put into this is probably not surprising. I will say this, guys, from my conversations earlier in the week, I talked to a couple former NHL executives. They both agreed that part of the holdup on Morrissey might be that everybody was waiting to see that other shoe to drop, or the first shoe to drop, really, in Noah Hanifin. And now that deal has been done, Josh Morrissey and maybe Darnell Nurse and also Shea Theodore, those are the four, Hanifin, Theodore, Nurse, and Morrissey, that we're all kind of waiting. And now that one has gone, perhaps the trickle-down domino effect will be that the other three will get done. Of course, there is sort of an urgency with training camp now less than 2 weeks away.
You know, Mike, sticking with Josh Morrissey, isn't it more, I guess, imperative that the Winnipeg Jets sign Morrissey to a long-term contract, considering the uncertain future of Jacob Trouba being on the one-year deal?
Yeah, exactly. And I think the way Trouba played out this summer with going to arbitration and the one-year award, and you know, we of course aren't privy to everything that's been said between the parties and exactly how in-depth contract discussions went between them about something long-term. But look, all signs seem to point to an eventual breakup here between the Jets and Trouba. I'm not saying it's going to happen this season, but and I guess stranger things have happened, and perhaps there is a means to an end here and something long-term can get done. But you're right. I think if you're the Jets, you want some stability. You want to get that next core, if you will, locked up. You know, you've got guys like Scheifele and Ehlers already and now Hellebuck under contract long term. So Josh Morrissey would absolutely be a part of that sort of next wave, that next core. I think Josh Morrissey, you know, he's at the very least a future assistant captain on this Jets team. Very articulate, well-spoken, thoughtful young man. And so I think if you're the Jets, you absolutely want to get his name for as many years as possible signed right now. And if you're Josh Morrissey, I can understand why you'd maybe want to bet on yourself a little bit and go the bridge deal route. My understanding is that's the holdup here. It's not like this is contentious. If they need to do a bridge deal, they could have done it yesterday, and that's already kind of in the back pocket. It's just whether or not they can agree on a long-term deal right now, or have to go that bridge route.
Mike McIntyre, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, discussing the Winnipeg Jets, discussing Josh Morrissey and his continued RFA status. One more question about Josh. You know, you mentioned the bridge deal. You mentioned the long-term deal. if you're both parties, and Ezzie and I were talking about this last segment, if you're both parties, isn't there, you know, maybe the sweet spot just to split the difference, go for a 4 or a 5 year contract? The Jets get some, you know, certainty. Josh Morrissey gets enough money to certainly live comfortably for the rest of his life. Isn't that maybe where the sweet spot is, as opposed to a 7 or an 8 year deal?
The arbitration special just split the difference. Yeah, you're right. And so I think that what you just mentioned, that there is probably that third option, and maybe that's where things have steered in recent days and weeks. I kind of have been looking at this Labor Day long weekend as sort of a pivotal moment, because, and again, I don't have anything that tells me for sure this is what's happening, but I just think that the parties may have traded some more information this past week and further talks. And maybe this long weekend was sort of meant to, you know, okay, everybody, let's just step back, take one last kind of look at everything, and then we'll talk again early next week. And I really do think we're going to see something get done here the next week. I'm not sure I'd have the ability right now to forecast exactly what that would be, but I think what you just suggested, something in the middle of a bridge deal and that long-term, you know, 8-year extension, that might be, you know, what gets looked at. And again, I think a lot of this just comes down to offense. Let's face it, guys, when you put up big numbers in the NHL, that's how you really get paid, whether you're a forward or a defenseman. And right now, Josh Morrissey, you know, he hasn't put up huge offensive numbers, and that's really no fault of his own. I mean, he's used in an absolute shutdown role, and we know he's very good at that. One thing Josh Morrissey doesn't do right now is get any power play time. And that is something that could certainly change, I think, in the next couple of years. You've got Tyler Myers on the final year of his contract. Not sure what's going to happen there. You've got Jacob Trouba, of course. Not sure what's going to happen there. You've got Dustin Byfuglien getting older. Toby Enstrom is no longer on the team. So I think there's going to be some opportunities for power play time for Josh Morrissey. And if he can put up some additional points on top of everything else he does, you know, he could certainly cash in down the road.
Mike, we haven't had you on since Christian Vesalainen signed his entry-level deal, and we know that Christian Vesalainen put up some really good numbers in the Finnish league last year. He was nearly a point-a-game player, and I think you'd agree that the Winnipeg Jets are going to give Christian Vesalainen every opportunity to make the opening night roster. But is your feeling that Christian Vesalainen is going to spend the majority of the season with the Manitoba Moose, or do you think there's always the chance that he's going to go back to Finland and play in the Finnish league, because he is allowed to do that under the terms of his deal?
Yeah, and I must admit that clause surprised me a little bit, just because Christian Vesalainen back at Jets development camp in late June, he talked about how he's ready to come and play full-time in North America in the pro game, and is, at least everything he said was very open to, even if that means starting with the Moose. The fact they put that sort of out clause, if you will, to go back to Europe if he's not with the Jets, that doesn't mean, of course, that he's going to exercise that, and maybe they just wanted that as a potential fail-safe. But yeah, I do think the Jets are going to give him every opportunity. I just look at what they have right now, and especially guys that would have to clear waivers to make room for Christian Vesalainen, assuming everybody's healthy. You know, does Christian Vesalainen bump Nick Batan or Marco Dano out of the lineup right now? And I know a lot of people out there might say, well, sure. But don't forget, then, if you're going to send Dano or Patan down, you risk exposing them on waivers. The Jets didn't send Marco Dano down at all last year to the Moose, even though he barely played, because they didn't want to lose him for nothing. It's all about asset management. And so, you know, does somebody take a claim on Patan or Dano if you move them down to try and move him down to the Moose? And if so, then where does Christian Vesalainen fit in? That's the big question. But I do think he'll get a good long look in training camp, and I'm very interested to see what he can bring once they start playing exhibition games and whatnot, because he definitely has a lot of tools. He put up the kind of numbers rarely seen by players his age in that league. And so I think that the Jets look like they've got another good one here, just whether or not he's ready to start with the NHL this season or needs a little bit more seasoning remains to be seen.
Mike, last question for you, then we'll let you get on with your Labor Day weekend celebrations. Blake Wheeler, he's an unrestricted free agent at season's end. He's obviously eligible for a contract extension as we speak right now. Is this a trickier negotiation than maybe people are paying attention to? He's coming off a career year. Ostensibly, he should be on the downside of his career, given right. that he's into his early 30s. You know, how is any the captain of the team? So he's got, you have that to factor in there. How tricky do you think that negotiation will be, assuming that, you know, is either already started to take place or going to take place during the course of the season?
Well, and he's captain of a team that, of course, was 7 wins away from winning the Stanley Cup this past spring. And you're right, he's playing at his absolute peak. And clearly, this team is Blake Wheeler's team. I mean, his impact in the dressing room and certainly on the ice is easy to see. You know, I think Blake Wheeler would absolutely love to finish out his career here. I think the Jets absolutely would love to have Blake Wheeler finish out his career here. It's just a question of whether they can make the math work, because let's face it, the Jets have a pretty complex situation going forward with the salary cap, with Patrick Laine, with Kyle Connor, with eventually Jack Roslovic, all needing new deals that are going to pay them substantially more than their entry-level contracts. And so you do wonder, I mean, I still keep going back to this, guys, the whole Paul Stastny sweepstakes, and a lot of people, of course, disappointed that the Jets missed out there. Well, I look at, you know, once they get Josh Morrissey signed, the Jets are going to be right up against that salary cap this season. That's without Laine and Connor and Roslovic on that new deal. So how would they have possibly fit Paul Stastny? Which players, and I'm using the multiple term, would they have had to move out to make Paul Stastny fit? And so I asked the same question with Blake Wheeler. Who's going if Blake Wheeler is going to be staying? That doesn't mean that they can't make it work, but I think it is a very complex situation. One thing, though, I for sure think, guys, is that it won't be a distraction this year. I think Blake Wheeler will be as motivated as ever to get his team back to the promised land, if you will. I don't think he's going to, you know, be sulking or pouting or worrying about that. I think that will take care of itself, but I don't expect a quick resolution on that one.
Mike, when is Dump and Chase returning?
Dump and Chase is returning September the 13th.
All right.
I'm so glad you asked. Yeah, we'll get it going. Jason Bell and myself, our weekly digital online hockey notebook with lots of fun gizmos and gadgets. Yeah, starting September 13th.
Are you still
online only at the Free Press?
Are you still Dump this year, or does Jason get to be Dump and you get to be Chase this year?
You know, he's still Chase. I'm still Dump. I didn't get a promotion or anything like that. I will say, Dump and Chase was my brainchild, and yet somehow I got saddled with the worst name out of the two. But and Jason's also going to Finland. He's getting the Finland trip. We've got our travel schedule worked out. I'm doing a ton of games this year, but Jason gets the Finland trip. So yeah, he's certainly you know, winning that game of rock, paper, scissors that we're using to decide some things here.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what, Mike, you know, the altruism you show in letting Jason have all those nice little trips and all the nice little nicknames is something, you know, it's Mother Teresa, Gandhi, and then Mike McIntyre.
Jason's older than me, and, you know, they always say to treat your elders with compassion.
That's right.
So there you go.
Age before beauty, right?
Yeah.
Mike McIntyre of the Winnipeg Free Press. Mike, appreciate you joining us this morning. We'll see you in the rink in a couple weeks, buddy.
You bet. Thanks, guys.
Take care. When we come back, the Montreal Canadiens and Max Pacioretty have a bit of a sticky situation with one another. Talk about that next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Subban lifting it in the air to Pacioretty, and he saw him going there, trying to get it up to him. Now Pacioretty's to Pacioretty.
Max Pacioretty scoring for the Montreal Canadiens. Who knows how many more times we'll be able to say that as things between the Habs and their captain, the Habs organization and their captain, got a little bit more complicated earlier in the week. The Habs putting out there that Pacioretty might not be happy in Montreal, might not be willing to sign a contract extension, might have even asked for a trade. Pacioretty and his agent, Alan Walsh, refuting that statement in no uncertain terms. It's just amazing, Ezzy, that the Montreal Canadiens, who have often been held up as one of the standard bearers regarding the best franchises in professional sports, can have let things devolve so seriously with their captain that both sides are now fighting accusations of lying through the media. That how does Max Pacioretty report to Montreal Canadiens training camp in 2 weeks' time, given everything that we've seen basically all summer long? Almost traded at the NHL draft, fires that agent, hires Alan Walsh, and now they're in the midst of a war of words with the organization.
Yeah, Drew, it's a huge mess. And, you know, you talk about Max Pacioretty possibly being traded at the draft to the Los Angeles Kings, and I think that would have made a lot of sense for Max Pacioretty and the Kings, because we know that the Kings' problem is scoring goals, right?
Sure.
It's not keeping it out of their own net.
No,
and I agree with you. I mean, Pacioretty's coming off of a bad year. But
the whole Habs organization's coming off a bad year.
Exactly. Give me one player on that Montreal Canadiens team who isn't coming off of a bad year. He also missed some time due to injury. We should mention that. But, I mean, this is a guy that before last season had four consecutive 30-goal seasons, and he scored 30 goals five times in his career.
Mm-hmm.
It was 5 years ago that Max Pacioretty had 39 goals. If you look at, you know, the entire NHL over the last 5 years, Max Pacioretty's right up there
in terms of goals, right?
So,
yeah.
I mean, this is a really good player, and you mentioned it. I mean, this is the captain, and the way he's being treated right now, and, you know, you listen to some of the Montreal media. I know we're going to play Chris Nyland a little bit later, but, I mean, there are a lot of people that are unhappy with the way he's being treated, especially in the wake of what happened with PK Subban.
Absolutely.
Because when you look at this Canadiens team, just wanted to say this quickly, Drew, you look at this Canadiens team, and what was the core of this Canadiens team 3 or 4 years ago? Carey Price,
PK Subban,
and Max Pacioretty. Yeah. And now there's a good chance that Carey Price is going to be the only one left of those three players. So really unfortunate what has happened with Max Pacioretty, because, I mean, this is a guy that is as prolific a goal scorer as anyone.
It's a complete gong show in Montreal. You mentioned Chris Nyland. So earlier this week, Max Pacioretty had his charity golf tournament. It started off on a bad foot in that the Canadians were asked, Jeff Molson, Mark Bergevin were asked, if they were going to attend the golf tournament. It's a charity golf tournament. Bergevin, of course, the GM of the Habs. Jeff Molson, of course, the owner. At first, they weren't attending because apparently they hadn't been invited. Then they were hastily invited, and so they decided to show up. And apparently the entire event, as Arpan Basu of TheAthletic.com said, the entire event was a farce, they said, because everybody knows that they've been trying to trade Pacioretty and that the two sides basically hate each other right now, but they were trying to play nice and be all happy and smiley while at this charity golf tournament. Here's what Chris Nyland of TSN 690, our sister station in Montreal, had to say about the golf tournament, had to say about the Pacioretty situation with the Habs.
Well, I was at Max's golf tournament. And, you know, it was uncomfortable. I could see it, like, and honestly, all of a sudden, how come it comes out the next day after his tournament that he has to be traded? Why did it come out the next day? The day after the tournament? I don't get that, or do I get that? I think I do get that. You know, at the tournament, a friend of Max's get up and spoke, who was a big supporter of Max and the tournament, big sponsor of the tournament. He told Mr. Molson that he'd give $20,000, to the Children's Foundation if Max is there next year wearing the C. And I don't know if that made them uncomfortable.
Well,
sat there at the dinner and felt like maybe that they were being made to look bad. But, you know, fact of the matter is, and I believe Max when he says it to me. And listen, I know Max. I know him personally. I don't hound him. I don't call him. I don't ask him for scoops. Give me a scoop, this and that. But I just think what's happening with Max Pacioretty right now is so wrong, the way he's being dealt with, the way, you know, here's the captain of Montreal Canadiens, and whatever you think of him as a player, put that aside. I just think that they're really making themselves look bad the way they're dealing with this whole thing. And I think it's a shame for both parties. because I happen to like Mr. Molson. I really do. I like the Molson family. I just don't know how it's gotten this far that especially players who want to be in Montreal are all out of town or they're on their way out. And it's just, it's a shame it's gone this way.
That's Chris Nyland of TSN 690 addressing the Pacioretty situation. You know, he's right. This is a guy who wants to be in Montreal. His agent, Alan Walsh, has been, you know, whatever you want to say about Alan Walsh, he's said on the record this is a player who wants to sign a contract extension, has not been offered a contract extension. I mean, I'm not sure how why the Habs aren't trying to re-sign him. Like you said, he's a perennial 30-goal scorer more often than not. It's just a bizarre situation.
Not only bizarre, has there ever been a more awkward golf tournament in the history of golf tournaments? The Montreal Canadiens management and coaching staff were originally not even going to attend.
That's what I said, yeah.
And then they had this kind of farce of a golf tournament.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that the actual golf tournament wasn't well run.
The golf was well played, is what I understand.
I'm saying that, yeah. You know, this tournament comes at a time when most people know that Max Pacioretty is not going to be a member of the Canadiens long term. I feel really bad for Pacioretty. Obviously, they're raising money for a good cause. But
if your captain's charitable golf tournament turns into a controversial event, you're doing something wrong.
Exactly.
Like, can you imagine, like, the Blake Wheeler or the Mark Scheifele golf tournament being a controversial event? Things have gone poorly at that point in time when it's controversy, when the owner and the general manager show up. This is supposed to be a fun, lighthearted event in the middle of the summer that doesn't create any real news. This one created real news.
Right, and it's not Pacioretty at all.
No,
it's the Habs ownership. Management and I shouldn't say coaching staff. It's more so Habs management, Mark Bergevin. And I think what was most interesting about what Chris Nyland said there, when you're talking about, you know, these rumors that have been put out there, and I forget the name of the journalist in Quebec that said that Max Pacioretty and his agent, Alan Walsh, had requested a trade, but now they've denied it. And it looks pretty stupid, and there's no reason to believe why the captain of a team who has said repeatedly that he likes living in Montreal, his family's in Montreal, there's no reason to believe that he has requested a trade. And then he mentions at the end, Chris Nyland, Max Pacioretty has said repeatedly that he wants to play in Montreal, and then this isn't the first time this has happened. P.K. Subban loved playing in Montreal. Loved it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the Montreal Canadiens ownership and management that decided they wanted to trade him because of what had happened throughout the year.
For the life of me, and I'm sure we'll be talking about this next week as well, for the life of me, I can't understand how Mark Bergevin continues to escape unscathed from the perspective of Jeff Molson. We know that Habs fans in Montreal are fed up with Mark Bergevin as general manager of the team. They don't think he's done a very good job as general manager.
Honestly, Drew, I don't know why he still is the GM.
Why is
he the GM? If you look at where this team was a couple of years ago to where they are now, I mean, are they one of the worst teams in the league now?
Without
I would say they are.
Assuming Max Pacioretty gets traded before the season starts, they don't really have anyone to score. Jonathan Drouin can't do everything by himself.
Look at that defense without Shea Weber.
I mean, it's a bad team. The only thing that they have going for them is Carey Price. And if I'm Carey Price, I'm sitting there saying, why the hell do I want to be here? I know I've got the long-term deal, but I signed this long-term deal expecting that we were going to be a perennial playoff team with myself, you mentioned it earlier, as a Subban, Pacioretty, some quality players. Now we're a gong show, and I'm being left to dry, I'm being hung out to dry night in, night out.
If a year from now Bergevin is still the GM, I'll be shocked. Absolutely shocked.
I don't disagree with you. It'll be interesting to see how things play out in Montreal. When we come back, they've started with some of the preseason rankings, McDavid versus Crosby, which one's better. We'll talk about that next, and we'll talk also with Aaron Bernstein of Bernstein's Deli. The Burger Week entries are in the building. We'll talk about some burgers. We'll talk about Crosby and McDavid.
I'm getting hungry, Drew. Let's do it.
Oh, boy. It's all coming up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Now McDavid walks right out, holds, shoots, scores! Home and Canada takes a 1-0 lead, 1:23 in. McDavid walks in and shoots, scores! Oh, what a move by Connor McDavid.
Now Parayko flips that wide, McDavid back on it. Now McDavid gets Hogan down, jam play, scores! Hat trick, Connor McDavid!
Connor McDavid with the hat trick, something you really people should get used to hearing because he's one of the most prolific goal scorers, one of the best players in the entire NHL. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, September 1st here on TSN 1290. This segment of the program brought to you by our good friends at Bernstein's Deli. Our good friend Aaron Bernstein here with us in studio as Burger Week, Le Burger Week, kicks off as of about 10 minutes from now, if I'm not mistaken. There, Mr. Bernstein. Bernstein's Deli, of course, a proud supporter, a proud participant in Le Burger Week. So we will, of course, talk about their entry as we do each and every year right around this time when Burger Week is. It's from now until next Friday, September 1st through 7th, located in the Cordon Village Mall. Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for over 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. You know it's the beginning of the NHL season when the various media entities come out with their top 100 players or their best players in the entire NHL. And one of the media entities came out with theirs earlier this week, and they had Connor McDavid of the Edmonton Oilers ranked higher than Sidney Crosby of the Pittsburgh Penguins. Agree? Disagree, Mr. Ginsburg.
It's hard to disagree that Connor McDavid
has surpassed Sidney Crosby.
Sidney Crosby, and you know, McDavid's won the Art Ross Trophy the last 2 years, puts up 108 points last year, mm-hmm. and isn't even a finalist for the Hart Trophy.
Right.
Mainly because the Oilers missed the playoffs.
Right.
But it's hard to disagree that he isn't the best offensive player. Now, as far as I'm concerned, if you want one player on your team in a playoff series, it's Sidney Crosby. I still think Sidney Crosby is the best all-around player in the league. Connor McDavid is the best offensive player in the league as far as I'm concerned. And I don't even know if it's close, really. I think it's Connor McDavid and then the rest of the NHL.
In terms of offense only.
Right. And when you're talking about Nikita Kucherov and Claude Giroux and Taylor Hall and some of the players that finished behind him as far as points go, but who did Connor McDavid play with last year? The answer is everybody.
Everybody.
He played with seven or eight different players, and you put Connor McDavid, with a Taylor Hall, he probably puts up 140 points. Maybe not 140, but 120, I think, is realistic. And I think he will put up 120 points in the not-so-distant future. You forget, Drew, that he's 21 years old.
I know.
And he's already had back-to-back 100-point seasons. So I wouldn't disagree that Connor McDavid is the best offensive player in the league, but as far as I'm concerned, Crosby is still the best all-around player, and that's just because he's got the three Stanley Cups on his resume.
That's really the difference right now, is the Stanley Cups that McDavid wishes he had, and who knows how his career is going to play out. I mean, Edmonton's certainly not doing a great job of taking advantage of Connor McDavid, but Crosby, the three cups, maybe so. Over an 82-game season, you might say McDavid's your guy, but in a one-game do-or-die situation where the Stanley Cup is on the line, Crosby might be your guy at this point in time.
Well, it's like I said, Crosby is the best player all around. He's all over the ice. He's the guy that you want out there, I think, to win a hockey game. If you want a goal scored, Connor McDavid is the best player in the league.
Yeah.
And obviously, guys, the term best player is very subjective. I mean, there's no right or wrong answer. I'm sure if you polled, 30 different NHL, I guess 31 NHL general managers,
yeah,
half would probably take McDavid and half would take Crosby. Maybe now after this 108-point season, more would take McDavid, but it's tough to argue against Sidney Crosby and what he's done. I realize that last year, the Caps beat the Penguins in the second round, but I just think it's a matter of time before this isn't even an argument anymore. 2 or 3 years from now, we won't even be having this argument. Connor McDavid will be the best player in the league. I'm just saying, I don't think he's rounded out his game quite yet in the vein of Crosby.
We're talking about the Crosby versus McDavid debate. I got to say,
eating this burger? Well, we've got these burgers in front of us.
I was going to say, Sean, our producer, has certainly not wasted any time whatsoever diving headfirst into his burger. So
let's get Seanosaur on the mic right now.
Well, we can't right now. He's chewing. So Aaron from Bernstein's Deli is here in studio. Aaron, you've brought us all your Burger Week entry, which gets underway in about 7 minutes' time, is when Burger Week starts. Runs from now until end of business next Friday. What do we have here? What is the burger this year? I mean, this is one of my favorite segments all year long because you consistently prepare these unbelievable burgers for people to try. This year's entry is called From Farm to Deli. Tell the audience what they can look forward to here.
Sure thing, yeah, and thanks for having me in here. And it's great to be here right at the launch of Burger Week. I think in the past I've been here a day earlier, a day late, just based on the timing of the show, so it's perfect this year. So what you're eating is the hamburger that we've entered for Burger Week. It's a 6-ounce organic grass-fed beef patty from Howe Park Farms. Then we've taken Smith's...
Howe Park Farms is a local butcher or a local...
Their farmers are, I think, about an hour southwest of Brandon. They're okay. The only certified organic grass-fed cattle producers in the province.
Terrific. So it's local, it's fresh, it's clean, it hasn't been shipped over for, you know, sitting frozen for weeks on end or anything like that.
Yeah, I think the cows were still eating grass last week.
Wonderful.
And we got the meat Thursday night to
the cow that's sitting next to me, Ezra Ginsburg, is currently eating the burger. So yeah. He's going to be lost for the rest of the segment, that's for sure. Sorry,
absolutely.
Sorry. Go on. So you got an organic grass-fed burger patty.
Yeah, so then we took Smith's Beef Salami, which is a staple of our business.
Mm-hmm. Staple of the Illegal Curve sandwich as well.
Of course. But we've dried it in a dehydrator and then sliced and grilled it. So it's like even more concentrated flavor, that salty crunchiness, like a bacon, but it's Jewish style, I guess.
Okay.
And then we've taken Bothwell cheese curds. We just think they make great cheese curds. We use them in our poutine all year.
Another local company.
Yeah, but we've baked them into a slice and then remelted on the burger. And it's a different kind of cheese experience.
Okay, so let me try. So you take a cheese curd. Bake it like together into one larger cheese curd?
No, it flattens out on a cookie sheet.
Okay.
And it's basically like, it looks like the top of a cheese pizza. It's like nicely browned and crispy and salty and
Ezzy just
chewy.
Passed out. He's actually in ecstasy of the burger right now. We might have to get Ezzy some heart paddles or something right now. Keep going, I'm listening. So there's cheese on this delicious burger now, and
of course.
You got cheese and salami on an organic grass fed patty.
And it's a generous portion of cheese. So it's about 50 grams of cheese, which is probably close to double a normal cheese slice.
I'm liking it.
And then we took onions.
Yeah.
And onions are on most burgers. They're caramelized on most burgers, but we've caramelized them in Fort Garry Pale Ale beer.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. So it's just got that sweetness and beer taste there in the back notes as you're eating it. And then we've topped it with some kale in a simple dressing to give you that crunch and lettuce type component. Then there's a couple sauces that we made ourselves. We have a roasted green pepper and jalapeno aioli, and also a tomato chutney. And then all of it comes together on our matzo meal focaccia bun, which again, something you've probably never had before.
I've never had a matzo meal focaccia bun. That is true. I've had matzo meal,
mm-hmm.
But I've never had, and I've had focaccia, but I've never had the two of them together.
Yeah.
So this sounds like how much time, how much prep, how much effort goes into creating the burger and coming up with the burger? Because you've had some legendary burgers over the years for Burger Week. How much time and effort does it take to come to the, the final product?
Well, we've been working on it for probably 2.5 months.
Wow.
And, the organizers are really on top of things. You have a pretty firm deadline for the photography about 3 weeks before you start serving it, so you have to get it finished. So we got it done and created right about then, 3 weeks ago. And since then, we're just trying to get ready. We're hoping to sell 2,000 of these. Last year, we sold 1,500. We've got the beef for it. We've got all the ingredients for it. And we're just, hoping to get some good crowds out and get everyone fed and happy.
There you go. It starts for the Burger Week. It gets underway in about 2 minutes' time, 10 a.m. this morning. It'll be available at Bernstein's Deli. Quickly, you're a hockey fan. I know how big of a Jets fan you are. Crosby or McDavid? Yeah, I asked Ezzy the same question. Ezzy's too busy eating right now to unfortunately join us on the segment. But Crosby or McDavid, from your perspective, which one would you take right now, given the situation?
I think I would be taking McDavid.
You would take McDavid.
If we're looking to build a franchise, someone that's going to put points on the board, on your top line. I guess Crosby's not making as much money in the cap world that might help, but McDavid, just player for player, I think he's the man.
There you go. Aaron Bernstein from Bernstein's Deli bringing us some burgers to try, La Burger Week entry. Aaron, thank you for joining us on this segment. When we come back on the program, we're going to be joined by Matthew DeFranks of the Dallas Morning News. The Dallas Stars may be in some controversy, I don't know if that's too strong of a word, with Tyler Seguin. We'll talk to Matthew up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Hour number two of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now, Saturday morning here on TSN 1290. This segment brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From the Dallas Morning News, we're pleased to welcome to the program Matthew DeFranks. Matthew, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Good morning. What's going on, Doug?
Not too much. You're making the move from South Florida to South Texas. How's the new gig with the covering the Dallas Stars?
It's good so far. We'll see how it gets going once training camp starts. But so far so good. Just kind of weathering the heat. It's a different kind of heat in Texas than from Florida, so it's a little bit of adjustment there. But otherwise, a pretty smooth sailing.
That's great, Matthew. Congratulations on the new gig, of course, with covering the Dallas Stars with the Dallas Morning News. Wanted to talk to you this morning. Tyler Seguin made some news earlier in the week at the BioSteel camp with some of his comments about the contract negotiations with the Stars or the lack thereof. How surprised were you to hear from Tyler Seguin about the contract status and the lack of action between him and the Stars?
Yeah, I don't know if I was surprised about his sentiment. I think you're going to be surprised that he came out and said it, because there's not a lot of players, pending free agents, given his status, his stature, that are going to go out and say those types of things. But I think it's understandable from his perspective that he wants to have an eight-year deal. He wants to have, a double-digit million guaranteed each year and kind of have that John Tavares-like contract. I think it's understandable for him to want that stability before he goes into the final year of his contract. So I understand it from his perspective. I think I was probably a little bit surprised that he came out and said it. But, from the Stars' perspective also, they're looking at it saying, hey, maybe we don't want to pay him whatever 12 that he's asking or 11 that he's asking, whatever he's asking for. And they're maybe trying to just kind of see what they can get the number down to, because over 8 years, that's a big investment. No matter who it is, a million here, a million there over 8 years is a lot of money. So, they're probably trying to work out what they want as well. But I think overall, the situation is kind of not great, but it's not terrible.
You mentioned, that they don't want to pay him, $11 million. They don't want to pay him necessarily Tavares money. Jamie Benn signed that contract. That pays him $9.5 million a year. Mm-hmm. I think most observers would say that Jamie Benn is a better player than Tyler Seguin. Is that sort of the internal number that the Stars might be saying, that you can't make more, can't make more than Benn because you are not as prolific as Jamie Benn is?
That would make sense. I haven't talked to people that have said that explicitly, but I mean, he is, Benn is the face of the franchise. He's the captain, drafted, developed, prolific scorer, on the left wing there. And he's making 9.5, and I think he has 7 more years on his deal starting this year. So that would make sense. And, you look at what Kucherov just got in Tampa, and he got, 9.5 over 8 years. So, there are comps that point to 9.5, but you look at Seguin and what he's able to do, in all facets of the game and as a center, it's a different position than Wayne. And, he brings different things to the table. They're just different players. So I wouldn't be surprised if he asked for Tavares money. I mean, they're pretty similar contracts or pretty similar, stats over the last 5 years since Seguin came to Dallas. It would be an interesting comp. I'm just not, entirely sure where they're going to land. And last time I talked to Jim Mill, he said, the conversations were about where the market's going and not anything about Dallas itself or the Stars themselves or selling Seguin on the team.
Matthew DeFranks is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Matthew covers the Dallas Stars for the Dallas Morning News.
Matthew, we wanted to ask you about Valeri Nichushkin. I think when you think of the Dallas Stars and all of their offensive weapons, you obviously think of Tyler Seguin and Jamie Benn, Alex Radulov, John Klingberg, one of the best offensive defensemen in the league. Valerie Nichushkin now returns after spending a couple of years in the Continental Hockey League. What are realistic expectations for Nichushkin? Would you pencil him in right now as a second-line winger?
Yeah, I think that's where they're going to try to put him. He's going to be a really important figure for this team because, you know, as we saw last year, they have that great, great top line with Ben Sagan and Radulov, but there wasn't a whole lot else behind them. So, you know, you get to the second line, you had Spezza, who was, you know, hurt or playing wing or ineffective under Ken Hitchcock, and you had Matthias Janmark, and you had, you know, now you're going to have Nichushkin out there, and he's going to be a big step into providing secondary scoring. He showed it a little bit when he was a rookie, and then he got hurt his second year and then moved over to Russia. So, you know, it's going to be interesting to see what he's like under Jim Montgomery this year, what he's like, you know, 2 years later. You know, the Stars think they have a more mature player. They think that he's going to be kind of fit that puck possession style that Jim Montgomery has, and that he'll be able to use his good body and cycle the puck through the ozone. So it'll be interesting to see what he can do. I'm not sure exactly what those numbers will end up being, but if he can give him 40 points, that would be probably a huge step into solving their secondary scoring needs.
Matthew DeFranks, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Matthew covers the Dallas Stars for the Dallas Morning News. Matthew, you mentioned Jim Montgomery. He's, of course, a rookie NHL head coach coming over from the NCAA ranks. You know, you mentioned he wants to play a puck possession style. The Stars have sort of gone, you know, last year they were very more defensively oriented under Ken Hitchcock. 2 years ago, under Lindy Ruff, they were go, go, go with no commitment to defense at all. You know, is the team well suited to play the Jim Montgomery style puck possession? Do you think that he's going to seamlessly make the transition from NCAA to NHL?
I think he can. Yeah, I think you look at his style, and you know, when I talked to him earlier this month, or I guess it's September now, earlier in August, he was talking about how his style would be a blend of Ruff and Hitchcock, and kind of be somewhere in between them. And so I think that kind of bodes well. I mean, look, the Stars were good under Ruff at times, and they were good under Hitchcock at times. And, you know, I think the one thing that sticks out to me about Montgomery's style is that there's going to be a lot less dump and chase. He doesn't want to dump the puck in. He wants to have clean entries. And, you know, last year the Stars had the third most dump ins in the league. So it's going to be a different kind of style. It's going to be more exciting when you have clean zone entries. And, you know, even talking analytics with him, he's saying, hey, I want to know how much time we have in the ozone, how much time the opposing team has in the ozone. I'm not really worried about, you know, shot figures or shot attempts because I'll kind of want, you know, zone time, quality over quantity sort of deal. So he kind of knows where his team is at and where he wants to take them. And it'll be interesting to see what happens. You know, I just came from covering a first-year coach and Bob Budner in Florida, and the Panthers didn't get clicking until after the All-Star break. So, you know, with time, sometimes it takes some adjusting to the new coach's systems, and other times you look at Vegas last year, it just kind of clicked right away. So I'm not sure which way with Montgomery it'll look, but it'll definitely look different than it did under Hitchcock.
Matthew, Miro Heiskanen is the Stars' number one prospect right now. I think you'd agree with that. And I think the expectations mm-hmm. for Miro Heiskanen are sky high this year. I think, you know, most Stars fans are expecting him to step right into the lineup because of how talented he is and all of the fanfare. He was a third overall draft pick, and he had a really good last year in the Finnish League. He had a couple of good years in the Finnish League, but he really stepped up his offensive game last year playing for HIFK Helsinki. Is it safe to assume that he's not going to be treated with kid gloves, and by the time you know, the season is halfway done, Miro Heiskanen is going to be playing a top four role?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, he could be treated with kid gloves and be in the top four at the halfway point. I think, you know, he could play that bottom pair and with a defensive defenseman on his other side and kind of see how that goes and how adjusting to the NHL goes, a smaller ice. And then he could become what everyone thinks he can become for years to come and be that top four guy. And it's going to be interesting who he's going to partner with because he is such a smooth skater, very creative while in the offensive zone, but also very responsible on the defensive end. If the Stars want to put him with someone like Julius Honka, you know, a smaller guy with a lot of offensive skills and kind of bring that European flair over, or if you want to put him with someone like Stephen Johns, kind of a heavier guy and you know, a bigger checker. So we'll see what Jim Montgomery wants to do with his pairings on the DN. But it'll be fun to watch Miro Heiskanen, just looking at what he was able to do in Finland, and he's been over in Texas for a few weeks now, skating in first row. So he's kind of getting used to American life a little bit more, and it's you have to remember he's also 19 years old, so he might take some time to get used to everything. But the sky's the limit from everyone I talk to.
Along those same lines, Matthew, can the Stars acquire Erik Karlsson without giving up Heiskanen?
Well, if they could have, it probably would have been done already, right?
So probably.
So, I mean, I think, everyone could use Erik Karlsson, right? He's one of, if not the best defenseman in the league, and you put him on a team with John Klingberg, and they can play 50 minutes a night. One of them can be on the ice at all times. So that would put the Stars as a Stanley Cup contender immediately. But, given his contract situation is last year and the uncertainty of extending him and plus the uncertainty of extending Sagan, they probably would have cap space at once Jason Spezza comes off the books, but it's just a lot of moving pieces. And then you throw in the Heiskanen part. And, do you want to kind of send away your top prospect, that Brad everyone thinks is going to be great, for Erik Karlsson? I don't know. It's a tough decision weighing, the present and the future for Jim Nell. But I think if they could have, got Karlsson without Heiskanen, it would have been done already. We'll see how that changes once the year progresses and kind of the pressure on Ottawa grows a little bit, or, if they want to start selling before the trade deadline approaches, we'll see what happens. But I think nothing really has changed a whole lot that they could use Karlsson. But Heiskanen's still on the team too.
Matthew, every time I watched the Dallas Stars last year, I was really impressed by Matthias Janmark. He's a player who can really play in all situations. He scored 19 goals last year. He's only played 2 years in the NHL. You could call him a late bloomer. Are you surprised that he only signed that one-year deal back in July, considering that he was coming off of a career year and maybe the Stars were prepared to offer him a longer-term deal?
I'm not too sure. He does have that injury history, and he needs to morph into that second line guy that can be a secondary scorer and kind of add more depth to the offense. So, I think this deal can be kind of a show me deal, a prove it on the ice and kind of cash in later. But he's going to be just as important. You want a bounce back year from Jason Spezza and Matthias Janmark's going to be important there, as is, Nichushkin on the other side. So, I'm not sure how long Jim Montgomery wants to keep that line together. If he wants to throw someone from the top line down there or what, but Matthias Janmark has to be, is going to be an important player for them, in that top six there.
Matthew, last question for you. We appreciate you giving us your time on this Saturday morning. The Stars were active at the trade deadline, at the free agency rather, acquiring former Boston Bruins goaltender Anton Khudobin. He's going to make $2.5 million a year backing up Ben Bishop. What are the expectations for Khudobin, and what does that mean for Ben Bishop and how his performance was perceived by the franchise last season?
Yeah, I think it's more of an insurance policy. I think they just need Khudobin to be better than Kari Lehtinen was. Lehtinen's numbers overall weren't that bad, but you look at what happened during that 8-game losing streak in March, and they went through that stretch without Bishop, and Lehtinen was the guy that was bad stopping them to 8 straight losses. So I think his history in Dallas as well, he's had some playoff miscues as well. I think that contributed to them moving on from him. But you look at the numbers, and Khudobin is a decent backup, and they paid for one of the top backups on the market. And, I think he does add insurance if Ben Bishop does get hurt again, because he has had a history of getting hurt in March, April playoff time. So, Khudobin is a veteran. He had a good track record in Boston. So I think he just kind of adds a little more depth, but Ben Bishop is still the guy there.
Matthew DeFranks covers the Dallas Stars for the Dallas Morning News. Matthew, appreciate your time this morning. I'm sure we'll be speaking with you a bunch throughout the season as the Jets and the Stars, Central Division rivals, will do battle throughout the course of the year.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks.
Take care, Matt. Thanks very much. When we come back, we discuss the Edmonton Oilers. Andre Sequeira, significant injury on the Oilers' back end. How significant is it for an Oilers team that was very status quo this offseason? You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Saturday morning, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Quick programming note, next Saturday we're back to our regular 3-hour time block. So that'll be really the start of the season, kicking off next Saturday, 9 a.m. to 12 noon here with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN1290. This segment of the program brought to you by our good friends at Keener Jerseys. Over the past 20 years, Keener Jerseys has established itself as one of the best jersey customizers in the world. If you want awesome jerseys for your rec team or have a jersey you want personalized, visit KeenerJerseys.com or check out their showroom at 982 Portage Avenue. That's the corner of Portage and Sherburn. Tell them that Illegal Curve sent you.
You know, I got to tell you, it's kind of tough to focus on doing a radio show when you've got the burgers in front of you here.
Well, my question for you, delicious. I know it's delicious, but my question for you would be, you know, you just stuffed some salami in your mouth. Why didn't you do that when we were in the middle of the break as opposed to when we came back on air?
Oh, I was eating during the break as well.
I see. Okay. So you're just really stuffing as much as humanly possible in
your
mouth at one
time. Plus, we got some Timbits here. I mean, Drew, I'm very excited.
Yeah, it's really just a big day for you, isn't it? You know, everything's coming up Ginsburg on this Saturday morning is what I'd say. While we were off, it sort of went, maybe not underreported, but under discussed. The Edmonton Oilers lost Andre Sequeira to a torn Achilles tendon while he was training for the upcoming season. If you remember back to last year, Andre Sequeira missed the first part of the year with, I believe it was a torn ACL he'd been recovering from that happened in the playoffs when the Oilers made that run in the playoffs. So he finally achieved some playoff success. Last year, Sequeira missed the first half of the year, big chunk of the year. The defense was terrible. When he came back, he certainly was not at full strength. The Oilers were counting a lot on a healthy Andre Sequeira to improve their back end because their defense was pretty horrible last year. Well, lo and behold, Sequeira injures himself again. The Oilers, again, going to be in trouble potentially on the defensive side of things. How significant is this Sequeira injury for an Oilers team that didn't do much this offseason, was just counting on bounce-back years from the status quo roster that they trotted out last year?
Yeah, Andre Sequeira is an excellent defenseman. A couple of years ago, he was a top-pairing defenseman for the Oilers, but I don't think this injury is going to be as significant, Drew, because he wasn't good when he returned. I mean, you watched the Oilers last year.
Right.
All of Sequeira's numbers were down. I'm not just talking about offensive numbers.
No.
His numbers at even strength defending, his possession numbers were terrible.
He went from being about a 21-minute-a-night defenseman to a 16-minute-a-night defenseman. He just wasn't healthy.
No, and you know, we have to chalk that up to, as you said, he was dealing with all the injuries, the ACL surgery and all of that. And, you know, we have to mention it. It's really unfortunate for Sequeira. I mean, he's making a lot of money.
$5.5 million.
Right. And, you know, Sequeira is one of those defensemen who the Oilers were going to count on. Now, he's going to miss half of the season this year again. I mean, an Achilles tendon is a serious injury. He's going to miss at least, 20 or 30 games. He might miss more than that.
If the Oilers get him back by the new year, they'd probably be happy with that. But again, this is a guy who's now going to be 32, 33 years old. What kind of player are you getting back in terms of a guy who's had back-to-back knee injuries, back-to-back leg injuries?
Right. And, you know, the Oilers, you know, have, you know, the luxury of having, you know, some other really good players on that left side. I mean, Darnell Nurse was playing on the top pair. And I realize, you know, that Darnell Nurse isn't signed, but just like Josh Morrissey, Nurse is going to get signed within the next 2 weeks. It might even be, you know, sooner than that. It might be within the next week. And Darnell Nurse, I would expect to start opening night. You've also got Oscar Klefbom there on the left side. Klefbom is another guy who had a very disappointing year. I mean, Klefbom and Adam Larson, I mean, that was a go-to pair for Todd McClellan a couple of years ago
during the playoff season,
and they both struggled. And I'm talking about during the regular season as well. And, you know, I really wanted to talk about under the radar. Jacob Jerebek, if you listen to IC back in July, I was saying that I was hoping that a team would sign him. He was a guy that started last year with the Montreal Canadiens. I realize a lot of guys haven't heard of him. He's a left shot defenseman who finished the season with the Washington Capitals. I believe he's about 26 years old. He played most of his career overseas, but he's a guy that every time I watched him, he can skate. I mean, this is a guy that's not going to put up great offensive numbers, but Jacob Jerebek is a guy that I would expect to start the opening night on the left side of the third pair there. And, you know, I'm not as concerned because, you know, the Oilers, I'm just getting ahead of myself a little bit here because the season doesn't start for another month.
Don't start giving predictions just yet.
I think the Oilers are much better off than a lot of people think because everything went wrong for them last year. I mean, Milan Lucic is not going to be as bad as he was last year. Cam Talbot is not going to be as bad as he was last year. Jesse Puljujarvi, I think, is going to be better this year. Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, we know now, is going to play on the wing alongside Connor McDavid. They had a lot of success last year. Now, in terms of who's going to play on the right side, it could be Puljujarvi. It could also be Ty Ratty, who had some success last year with the Oilers. I think he played about 15 games. So I think the Oilers are better off than some people think. But Sequeira is one of those players. I mean, he's a veteran defenseman, a very smart defenseman. As you said, he can log big minutes. He can play 20 minutes a night. But when I look at that defense, and, you know, you've still got, you know, Chris Russell there on the right side, and you've got Adam Larson there on the right side, Matt Benning, you know, he's a decent third pairing defenseman. So I don't think this Oilers defense is, you know, top five or top 10 in the league, but I think it's better than people give it credit for being. But don't get me wrong. I thought the Oilers would go out in the offseason and they would try to go out and acquire a top four defenseman. Now, Jason Garrison, you sign him to a PTO, but at this stage in his career, all due respect, Jason Garrison's going to be a third pairing defenseman, an AHL defenseman.
He's got a big, heavy shot from the point, but he's not bringing. If you're relying on Jason Garrison to eat a lot of minutes on your back end, you're in trouble.
I mean, this is not Garrison from 5 or 6 years ago.
No,
he's 33 years old now. So, I mean, Garrison is a guy that you're hoping that, you know, maybe catches fire and, you know, gives you, you know, 20 or 30 games maybe in the NHL, and he's a depth guy. But this Oilers team, I think, can be a playoff team, but I don't think that they can do any damage in the playoffs the way that defense is currently constructed. I think they can move the puck. I mean, Darnell Nurse, Oscar Klefbom, I mean, these guys can put up decent offensive numbers, but when you compare that defense to teams like the Jets or the Nashville Predators or the St. Louis Blues or, you know, some of the teams in the East, I just don't think it matches up very well. But I don't necessarily know that not having Sequeira in the lineup is going to prevent them from getting back into the playoffs next year.
TSN Edmonton reporter Ryan Rashog was asked about the impact of the Sequeira injury. Here's what Ryan Rashog had to say about how this is going to impact the Oilers' back end.
Played 36 games. And he really struggled, played just over 16 minutes a night, and the Oilers blue line was a big reason why they ended up where they ended up. And so then you look a year before that at the role that he can play. Well, he was almost 21 and a half minutes per night, had 35 points. That is the Andre Sekera the Oilers were banking on getting back this year. The Sekera of a season and a half ago, now they're not even going to have him at all. And a decor that I think is still somewhat questionable if they're a good enough blue line to help the Oilers contend for a playoff spot.
Just a bizarre offseason, I think, from the Oilers' perspective, at least from the way I look at it. You think they would have done something to really upgrade from what was a terribly disappointing year. Instead, they just run the same players back again. I mean, who's Connor McDavid playing with this year? It's the same question that he had last year. There's no obvious built-in answer yet. It's just odd. All around in Edmonton. You'd heard that Milan Lucic was going to be traded. Well, it doesn't look like that's going to necessarily happen. I'd be surprised if it was going to happen at this point in time. So just odd all around from my perspective
in
Edmonton.
And I think Milan Lucic will be better this year. I don't think he's going to be a 35-goal scorer, but I don't think he's going to go 3 months without scoring a goal either like he did last season. So I think it's pretty clear Peter Chiarelli is going with the same core group, Drew. And a lot of the Oilers' success or lack of success is going to have to do with, does Jesse Puljujarvi take the next step? He's a fourth overall draft pick. They need more out of him. I mean, he had flashes last year. I forget how many goals he had, 12 or something like that.
But he's a young player. Again, if you're counting on a guy who's... yes, he should take a next step, but I mean, you can't necessarily expect that he's going to be the panacea for everything that ailed this roster last year.
I don't think he's going to be a panacea, Drew, but I mean, look at Patrick Laine. I mean, he stepped into the NHL and scored 36 goals. That's a second overall pick.
Yeah.
I mean, Puljujarvi's a fourth overall pick. Remember back to the 2016 draft, it was Puljujarvi versus Laine. All I'm saying is, at a certain point, you have to, you know, determine what you have with Jesse Puljujarvi.
Right.
Like, is he a 15-goal, 40-point guy? Is he a 20-goal, 50-point guy? I don't think he's going to be a 40-goal, 80-point guy, but I think you have to give him an opportunity on either the first line with Connor McDavid or the second line with Leon Draisaitl. I probably like him better with Connor McDavid on the top line, but I'm just saying they're going to expect more out of Puljujarvi, and Cam Talbot has to be better. I mean, he wasn't good enough last year. I'm not saying that it's all on Cam Talbot, but at times he didn't play like a number one goalie last year.
Well, you wonder how much that has to do with the defense that was in front of him again, which is now weakened by the Sequeira injury. I mean, I understand your point that, you know, if Darnell Nurse, you know, once he gets signed, I mean, if he takes again another step forward, that'll improve the defense by default. It's just odd for an Oilers team that was constantly tinkering and constantly, you know, searching for the right combination to then do nothing basically after a tremendously disappointing year. Just seems like an odd role reversal. And from my perspective, I sit back and I just, you know, wonder what they're doing when their biggest acquisition is Tobias Reeder.
Yeah, they signed Kyle Brodziak. They brought in Scotty Upshaw on a PTO.
Yeah.
I mean, these are all depth players, all due respect.
Yeah.
You expected a bigger trade, but we talked about it, you know, back around early July during free agency.
Yeah.
I mean, when you've made two horrible trades, I mean, you lost both of those trades. I don't care what anybody says.
No, there's
Taylor
no
Hall
about
for
it.
Adam Larson was a bad trade, and
Jordan
Eberle for Ryan Strome was a bad trade.
Well, that's just it. And I mean, if Lucic is, you know, is a little bit better than last year, but not as good as he was 2 years ago, is that enough to propel you back into the playoffs? I'm skeptical. I mean, Ryan Strome, I think we all know what Ryan Strome is as a player nowadays. He's going to get some flashes, but for the most part, Ryan Strome disappears on too many nights to really be counted on as a core member of any team. It'll be interesting to see how the Oilers are able to, you know, bounce back this season. That's one of the teams I'm keeping a real close eye on, because if things go bad quickly there, you're going to hear a lot of howling for the job of Jim Benning. Not Jim Benning. Help me out. Is it
Peter Chiarelli?
Peter Chiarelli. Thank you. I'm getting my bad Western Canadian.
They used to work together in Boston.
I know. That's why I got my bad Western Canadian teams confused.
I do think Edmonton can be a playoff team this year.
There you go.
And I know Shawnee Assor agrees with me.
Sean, do you agree with him? No, he's shaking his head no. He's just eating another burger. I don't know where he got that other burger. He just keeps swallowing another one. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Mitch Love. Mitch Love is the head coach of the Saskatoon Blades. He was the assistant coach for Team Canada that won gold at the Hlinka Gretzky Cup earlier this month. Mitch Love joins us next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN 1290.com.
Bottom of the hour, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live here on TSN 1290. This segment of the show brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For over 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Remember, a great list of upcoming comedians. Dave Nystrom at Rumors tonight. Two shows, 7:15 and 10 p.m. Get your tickets to rumorscomedyclub.com. Tomorrow, special Sunday show at Rumors. It's already sold out. Legendary WWE performer, Hall of Famer, Mick Foley, in town at Rumors one night only. If you didn't get it quickly enough, tickets are sold out for Mick Foley tomorrow night at Rumors Comedy Club, but a great list of comedians upcoming. Check it out, rumorscomedyclub.com.
Drew, who is your favorite Mick Foley WWE character? I know who mine was.
Yours seems to be, I think you're a Dude Love kind of guy.
Absolutely not.
No?
You got to go Cactus Jack all the way. You got to go old school.
Sure. Can't go wrong.
He was originally Cactus Jack.
Yeah, way back in
right?
the
day. And then
yeah.
He was Mankind for many years. Yeah. I loved Mankind, too.
Sure.
Those matches against The Undertaker.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Legendary.
I'm going to throw you off the roof of the building here. Like, he went through the, like, he was thrown off the Hell of the Cell.
Dude Love was fun, though.
Yeah, he was a fun...
He wasn't really Dude Love for that long.
No.
So for me, it's got to be Cactus Jack or Mankind. I mean, everybody remembers the mandible claw and how crazy Mankind was. And obviously, you know, Cactus Jack was the hardcore legend. So you got to go old school with Mick Foley.
There you go. Anyways, he'll be at Rumors Comedy Club tomorrow. Tickets sold out. RumorsComedyClub.com. Trying to get a hold of Mitch Love, hoping to bring him on, talk about his experience at the as the assistant coach for the gold medal winning Team Canada at the Hlinka Gretzky Cup.
Yeah, I think Mitch actually might be on the road. The Saskatoon Blades have actually, if you can believe it, they've already got into their preseason. They've played two preseason games, so hopefully we're able to get Mitch on here in the next few minutes.
Why are they start? It's only September 1st. Why are they starting preseason games so quickly, so early?
Well, they usually start earlier in junior hockey, but I agree. I mean,
it's awfully early.
But I love it. I mean, let's go. I mean, it's September. It's hockey season.
I know. It's September. It's getting close. I'm still okay with, summer lingering for a little while longer. I don't mind training camp beginning, at the beginning of or the middle of September. By then, it's a little bit chillier and everything else. But right now, I'm still counting on, some golf games and some nice warm weather on this Labor Day weekend, personally.
I'm golfing tomorrow.
Oh, there you go. Where are you golfing tomorrow?
Granite Hills.
Oh, very nice. You going out to the lake tonight?
Yep. Going out to Lac Du Bonny. Granite Hills is a beautiful course.
Yeah.
Every time I go there, I enjoy it. I mean, my score is usually horrendous.
Yeah. I've seen you swing. I mean, you still haven't rehabbed from your torn ACL from 20 years ago? How many years ago?
It's not really my ACL. It's more so the back.
Ah, the back. Well, you actually do have a very, because you're afraid of, too much torque on the back, you have a very slow, very methodical swing.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's been called more of a grandpa swing, but I hit it, usually about 200 yards straight.
Yeah, you are straight, and I mean, it makes you wonder if you actually swung hard how far it would go, because it would go pretty far, but I think, nobody wants to see you swing too hard and then end up, writhing in pain on the seventh fairway. That just slows up the entire golf game for everybody else.
I've got two birdies this year at Granite.
Look at you.
Yep, 15 and 14.
Yeah, well, Granite Hills, of course, on the TSN 1290 golf discount card, so I hope you're taking advantage of that.
If you haven't golfed that course, I mean, get out to Lac Du Bonny. It's about, an hour and a half northeast of Winnipeg.
You can stay at Naomi's Cottage.
No, you can't.
Oh, okay. Sorry. I didn't know what the etiquette was there with offering people to stay with you. You don't want randos staying with you?
I'll meet you for a drink at Granite Hills, but...
But you're not opening
up
the doors?
With all the kids, there's not enough room. There's only so many bedrooms.
There's probably not enough room for you most of the time, I would assume, is what the reality of the situation is. But anyways, Ezzy's going to be at Granite Hills. If you're up in that area tomorrow, you can buy him a beer or he'll buy you a beer.
No, I'll buy you a beer.
You'll buy you? That's very generous of you. You're nothing if not a...
I'm not going to buy you a beer, Drew. I'll buy whoever happens to mention that they were listening to the show a beer.
There you go. There you go.
You can buy your own beer.
I can buy my own beer? Okay, that's not very generous of you. Why can't you buy me a beer? I bought you a beer in the past.
I'll buy you a beer.
Okay, there we go. We got Mitch Love on the line now. Okay, let's head to the Hockey Show Hotline.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to welcome to the program Mitch Love. Mitch is the head coach of the Saskatoon Blades in the Western Hockey League. He was an assistant coach for Team Canada at the Hlinka Gretzky Cup that just happened in Edmonton earlier this August.
Drew just mentioned the Hlinka Gretzky Cup, Mitch, and that was the inaugural tournament that was played in Edmonton and Red Deer. What was that experience like for you personally, winning a gold medal on home ice?
Obviously, it's a great honor. Anytime you get to don your home country's crest, and whether you're a player or as a coach, and being a first-time event in Canada, it was a pretty special moment for those players, their families, and the coaching staff and management of Team Canada, and something that we'll all remember for a long, long time.
Mitch Love, our guest. Mitch is, of course, the head coach of the Saskatoon Blades in the Western Hockey League. He was the assistant coach of Team Canada at the inaugural Hlinka Gretzky Cup. Took place in Edmonton Red Deer earlier in August. Mitch, it was a fascinating semifinal that, unfortunately for a lot of people may have slipped under the radar because it was early August. But Canada and the U.S., rivals in the semifinal game, it goes right down to Canada scoring a very controversial tying goal that appeared to be almost no time left on the clock or tenths of seconds left on the clock at best. From your vantage point on the bench, what was the moment like?
Well, obviously, very emotional evening in general. Seems like when they would score a goal, we would score two, and then they'd score two, we'd score one. So it was a back and forth game, probably an instant classic in terms of that tournament's history of a Canada-US game. But from that particular play, from the bench, it looked like it was in right at the buzzer. Again, obviously, you've got different angles and different video cameras that tell you maybe a different story, but at the end of the day, based on the tournament's rules in that particular event,
you know, the officials have to make a call on the ice, and you know, they came up with a goal that made it, you know, sent the game to overtime.
Mitch, we mentioned earlier you're the new head coach of the Saskatoon Blades. That was after spending 7 years as an assistant coach with the Everett Silvertips, who you also played for. What was most appealing to you about the head coaching position in Saskatoon?
Well, I think first, you know, the most appealing, you know, part of it was an opportunity to be a head coach in the Western League. You know, it's something that you work for. I think if you're going to be a long-time assistant coach at this level, it's, you know, you're eventually striving to move yourself up in the coaching ranks, and you know, the opportunity presented itself, and then, you know, not to mention that the young talent that's been assembled here over the last few years, the management's done a real good job of piecing some things together, and you know, once we got our staff here and in place in Saskatoon, we've been, you know, putting our nose to the grind in terms of trying to, you know, change a little bit of the culture and try to lead these guys back to a playoff spot at some point.
Mitch Love is our guest here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Mitch is the head coach of the Saskatoon Blades of the Western Hockey League. He was an assistant coach for the gold medal winning Team Canada at the recent Hlinka Gretzky Cup. Mitch, you're going to be coached in the Hlinka Gretzky Cup. Kirby Dock, who is projected to be a top 10 pick in this coming year's NHL draft. He's obviously going to be one of your players in Saskatoon as well this coming WHL season. What has impressed you the most about Kirby Dock's game?
Well, he's got a high hockey IQ. You know, I think one of the things that's probably a little bit underrated in his game is I think he is a 200-foot player. You know, I think there's, as any young player, you can never have enough of that in your game. You know, we're going to be a team that's really going to try to stress playing the games a lot quicker, a lot faster, you know, moving pucks quickly, thinking the game quickly. You know, and I think, you know, that'll be a part of his game that he'll need to continue to improve on. But you know, his playmaking ability is second to none. You know, he sees the ice so well. You probably want a little bit more of a shot first mentality on him, but you know, I think that'll come with growth and maturity as well as he goes about as a young hockey player in this league.
Mitch, last week the Saskatoon Blades signed Washington Capitals draft pick Christian Roikas Marthinson, and you know, he's a guy that hasn't played in the WHL. He just turned 19 years old. What's the biggest challenge in coaching a player who's coming over from the Swedish League and trying to adapt to his first year in the Western Hockey League?
Well, the beauty about both European players that we have on our roster, they both speak fluent English. I think that's a big benefit to them in terms of learning the North American game. The other benefit for Roikas is, you know, he's a Washington Capitals pick. He came over here for a purpose, and that's to try to earn himself a pro contract. And so that means for us as a staff that he's committed to wanting to get better. And I think that's something that you can kind of hammer a youngster with in terms of adapting and learning the game and what it takes to be a pro. And there's some real nice tools there from the limited viewings we've had through the first few preseason games. It's a big body that, you know, can shoot the puck hard, and he does have a fairly good hockey IQ, and something that we'll just kind of keep chipping away at here throughout the hockey season.
Mitch Love, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Mitch, the head coach of the Saskatoon Blades in the Western Hockey League. Mitch, you come to Saskatoon, we mentioned it earlier, after having spent a lot of time with the Everett Silvertips. You know, you played for Everett, and then you coached in Everett with former NHL head coach Kevin Constantine. Our audience might remember him as the head coach of the Pittsburgh Penguins, among other teams in the NHL. How significant has Kevin Constantine been in your career, both as a player and now in your role as a head coach?
He's been very instrumental, you know, not only, you know, as a coach and a player, but as a person. I've learned a lot of different things from him that I think I still try to carry along with putting my own slice to the way I coach the game. He's a brilliant hockey mind, you know, a unique individual to say the least at times, but you know, I do owe him a lot. He's taught me a lot about, you know, obviously the defensive side of the game. And I'm just trying to definitely continue to grow on the other side of things as an offensive minded guy as well. So, you know, I can't owe him enough. He's been a very, very big part of my life.
Mitch, we wanted to ask you about this. I don't know if you saw this earlier this week. TSN's Rick Westhead reported that a number of OHL prospects have been advised to remove their references to Fortnite on their social media accounts. And what do you think about that, and what was your reaction to that, and are you going to have to talk to your players about that? I mean, it seems kind of ridiculous to me, but do you care if some of your players are playing this video game and tweeting about it or talking about it?
I think I'm at the understanding of, as a hockey coach, and you know, probably a fairly young one in terms of where I'm at in my career, but it's part of these kids' lives, you know. I think as a coach, you pick your battles. I mean, we're constantly on them about different things in a hockey game or the way they handle themselves professionally in communities and whatnot. And, you know, if they want to play video games, and of course, there's got to be some sort of education in terms of when's too much and when's too little and whatnot. And, but at the same time, they are young men. They're teenagers. If they weren't playing hockey, they'd be doing it at their parents' house, going to high school in their hometowns. It is part of their life. It's no different than social media. So I think you got to, it's a fine balance and something you got to monitor, but at the same time, they are young men.
Mitch, final question for you, and we really appreciate you taking the time this morning. The Saskatoon Blades have already got into preseason action. How have you liked the first couple of games here so far?
You know what? We've been making some nice strides. You know, I think the one thing we've preached to staff, to our group here, you know, when we cut down from training camp last week was, you know, we want to take this thing one day at a time. We just want to be able to come to the rink. We want to chip away at something that's going to make us better as individuals or as a team. And, you know, so far, you know, I've been impressed in the two games. We've made subtle improvements, subtle adjustments in our game that as a coaching staff we've been impressed with. And we got another chance here today in Regina in their tournament to, you know, play Swift Current and see if we can take one more step in the right direction for our group.
Mitch Love, the head coach of the Western Hockey League Saskatoon Blades and a member of the Team Canada coaching staff that won gold at the Hlinka Gretzky Cup. Mitch, appreciate your time. Best of luck this season. Thanks for joining us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, guys. Appreciate it.
Take care, Mitch. When we come back, one final segment on this Saturday morning, we're going to make fun of anybody who thinks Fortnite is that big of a deal. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
There was one good thing about the Winnipeg Jets being eliminated from the playoffs this past season. It gave Patrick Laine more time to devote to his other love, playing Fortnite. In the past, Laine has had some pretty big talk for his teammates about how much better he is at the game. He adheres to certain etiquette when playing, like not bush camping, whatever that means. But today, he put his money where his mouth is, playing live on Barstool Game Time.
Patrick Laine, one of the most prolific gamers in the NHL, presumably. I really don't know for sure. But he was a pretty good player for the Winnipeg Jets last year.
What does that even mean?
No bush camping? I have no idea. I don't know anything about Fortnite whatsoever.
Means hiding in the bushes.
Do you play Fortnite?
I've never played it, but I know some terminology and.
Like, you're here, you know, Monday to Friday more often. Are Remus and Huss just like watching people play Fortnite before the warm up starts?
Hustler isn't.
But Remus is?
I'm not sure what Remus watches.
No, Remus isn't watching. He's playing.
Well, I don't think he's playing here.
We would hope.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Like, I mean, look, I'm not a video gamer. Not my thing. All the power to you. If that is your thing, fill your boots with your hobby. Have you heard of anything as ridiculous as what Rick Westhead reported earlier this week? That some agents are instructing their representatives or, you know, instructing their players in the OHL to scrub references that they play Fortnite? I mean, it's a video game. It should not affect or impact your draft stock.
It's a video game, and we're talking about 16, 17, 18, 19-year-old kids.
Yeah,
if they want to play video games in their spare time, I think that's a good thing. Would you rather them partying all night long? I mean, like, there's nothing wrong with playing video games.
Not in my books.
Even if you're a 25 or 35-year-old.
Again, fill your boots. I don't care what you do. But, I mean, has the entire hockey world lost their mind to that point?
By the way, again, I'm with you,
too. I think everyone has.
I've never played Fortnite. I mean, the last video game that I played regularly was maybe Halo. And that was probably 15 years ago, kind of that first-person shooter. You'd play, like, you know, multiple people.
Yeah,
you'd have these kind of death matches.
Yeah, there weren't any girls around for you to interact with at that point in time, eh?
No girls.
Yeah, no girls at all. Halo was your girlfriend.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I've been told that Fortnite is kind of like Halo, but it's more online and it's more of a battle royale type of game.
It's like a fake world.
Every single NHL team has fantasy football leagues. Are you telling me that, and it's, you know, well received and no problem with it? Are you telling me that Fortnite is any more stupid than a fantasy football league?
That's
where
what
guys
I don't understand, Drew, is that Fortnite, I don't think, has any nudity or anything like that. Like, I don't think there's anything controversial,
it's
right?
It's very about PG-13.
The game. It's a PG-13 game. So I can understand if there was a video game that was, you know, it was, you know, I don't know, sexist or racist. Or, I don't even think those video games are allowed to be made.
I would hope not.
But the reality is, I think
it's a video game.
I think the agents are probably telling these kids that they don't want tweets coming out about Fortnite because they don't want them to think that they're playing video games more than they're training or
if you're
any
in
of this.
NHL,
I think it's ridiculous, Drew. I think if players want to tweet about Fortnite, I've never seen any players tweet about Fortnite.
Well, you put up 100 points this year in the Western Hockey League, and you're a terrific point-a-game player,
but
I see that you tweeted about Fortnite once, so I'm afraid I'm going to have to cut you from our draft board. You're going to be on our do-not-draft list entering the 2019 draft. I'm a wise general manager in the NHL.
Like, imagine going into a combine meeting and the GM asks you, are you a bush camper? What kind of character are you? Are you a bush camper kind of guy, or you get out there and just attack everyone? Like, it's just, it's so silly that this has come to this. And it's not just in junior hockey. Apparently, big problem in the NBA as well. A lot of players.
Again, the alternative. I mean, if this was 19.
I say problem.
Yeah,
because
okay, in quotes.
I like that discussion. Where would you rather have these guys out in bars or doing whatever?
In 1990, after practice, players used to go to the bar. That's what they did in their spare time. They'd go golfing, they'd go to the bar, they'd tip a few back, and then they'd go home.
I think there are players that still go to the bar, Drew.
I assume there are. But in 2018, the majority of players aren't out on the town. They're not out on the scene. If Nikolaj Ehlers and Patrick Laine are spending their spare time playing Fortnite in the hotel while on the road, I'm okay with that.
Big time.
I'm okay with that.
Do you think Chevy cares if Patrick Laine and Nikolaj Ehlers play Fortnite? You know what he cares about? How they play on the ice.
How many goals they get. You know, it's so ridiculous that this is, and I don't doubt Rick Westhead's reporting whatsoever. I think the hockey world is so stupid that it literally probably is a concern for certain general managers or for certain scouts or for certain front office types. Well, that guy really is playing a lot of video games. Why isn't he out drinking beer? That's a better and more wholesome way to spend your time. I'm a smart general manager.
Like, imagine you're a 17-year-old junior player. You come home from a hard day's practice, you know.
Yeah.
Long day of school, then practice, and I'm sure some training.
Some video.
You sit down with your billet family's kid. 7, 8, let's paint this picture. And the mom takes a nice picture, puts it on social media. You go to the rink the next day, you're reprimanded for playing Fortnite because it's shared off. It's just, it's so silly.
It really is remarkable. I mean, I just can't wrap my brain around it, that this is seriously, you know, and I put it in quotes, an issue. And it goes back to Jeff Merrick talking about, you know, how there was one player who legitimately had a addiction to video games. Now that's a serious issue. If you're legitimately addicted to anything, it's a serious issue. But to all of us, like, you know, if there's one guy in the NHL who's got an alcohol addiction, are you going to tell all the players in the NHL you can't drink? I mean, of course not. If you have one guy who's got an addictive personality and is addicted to Fortnite, telling them everybody that they cannot play or should not play video games is completely ridiculous. Get that one individual some assistance, like you would for anybody with an addiction problem, and move on. I mean, this isn't rocket science here, people.
These agents that are telling OHL players to scrub their Twitter accounts of Fortnite references, I mean, they really need to get a life.
They need to
chill. I mean, these are teenagers. If they want to play Fortnite, you know, for an hour or two a night with their friends, I mean, they're teenagers. They can do whatever they want, even if they're in their 20s. I mean, I think we all have to chill here.
I think we all have to chill here. That's a perfect way to end it. That's it for this Saturday morning and the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. A big thank you to our guest, Mitch Love. We are joined by Matthew DeFranks and, of course, by Mike McIntyre of the Winnipeg Free Press back in hour number one. case you missed any of the program, it's available for download on our website, illegalcurve.com and tsn1290.ca. Just subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcast. Get it sent to you automatically each and every week. Big thanks to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Burger Week starts right now, Zapier Group Realty, and Keener Jerseys. Support them because they support Illegal Curve Hockey. For producer Sean Asor, for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.